Thanks for the warm welcome. Thanks for coming. We're about to have a discussion about how this country can make sure our health care system is available and affordable. And I want to thank our panelists for joining us. It's an interesting way to describe and discuss policy. It's a lot better than me just getting up there giving a speech. So you don't have to nod. Do you want to kick things off, Mark?
I'd be glad to. I'd like to welcome all of you to the Department of Health and Human Services. As you know, there are many people here who are working day and night to protect the public health, to help our healthcare system work better. We have the privilege of working with the best health professionals in the world, doctors, nurses, others who have some great ideas about delivering better care and about finding ways to do it with fewer complications and at a much lower cost. But in many ways, our healthcare policies haven't kept up with what our healthcare system can do. And we're going to spend some time talking about that today. So, Mr. President, we're very pleased to have you here today to lead this discussion of some new ideas for improving our healthcare
system. Thank you, Mark. Thank Mike Leavitt. Where are you, Michael? Surely he's here.
He's in Florida, Mr. President.
Oh, he's in Florida. Okay. Surfing. Actually, I saw him this morning. Don't make excuses for him. He's doing a heck of a job. He really is. And I hope you enjoy working for him. I am really pleased that Nancy Johnson is here. Madam Congresswoman, thank you for coming. If you want to meet somebody in Congress who knows something about health care, talk to Nancy. She is a tireless advocate for making sure the health care systems are efficient and compassionate. And I really want to thank you for coming. It's a joy to work with you on these big issues. Thank all the folks here at HHS. Thank you for working hard on behalf of our fellow citizens. You've got a tough and important job, and you're doing it well. One of the reasons why is because we've clearly defined roles of government, with the role of government in health care, and one of the roles is to make sure our seniors have a modern, reformed Medicare system. And I want to thank those of you who are working on making sure that the Medicare system is explained to and available for seniors all across the country. We did the right thing when it came to saying that if we're going to have a program for seniors, let's make sure it works as good as possible. And part of that meant modernizing the system so it included a prescription drug benefit. It's not easy to sign up millions of people in a quick period of time to a new program, and there were some, glitches. The good thing about this department, and the good thing about Mike and Mark, is that they have prioritized problems to be fixed and have gone around the country fixing them. Millions of folks, about 25 million people, have signed up for the new Medicare benefit. I don't know if you remember when we first had the discussions about the Medicare benefit. People said it'll cost about $37 a month per beneficiary. One of the interesting reforms was not only making sure the medicine was modernized, but seniors actually were given choices to make in the program. And Mark's done a fine job of encouraging providers to be in the markets. And as a result of choice in the marketplace, the average anticipated cost is $27 a month. In other words, giving people a decision to make is an important part of helping to keep control of cost. We have a third-party system, third-party payer system. When somebody else pays the bills, rarely do you ask price or ask the cost of something. It seems kind of convenient, doesn't it? You pay your premium, you pay your copay, you pay your deductible, and somebody pays the bills for you. The problem with that is that there's no kind of market force. There's no consumer advocacy for reasonable price when somebody else pays the bills. And one of the reasons why we're having inflation in healthcare is because there is no sense of market. We're addressing the cost drivers of healthcare. And this discussion today is a part of helping to make sure healthcare is affordable. And as it becomes affordable, it becomes more available, by the way. A couple of ideas other than the subject at hand to make sure healthcare is affordable is, and we'll talk a little bit about information technology. I know there's a great initiative here at HHS to help bring the healthcare industry into the modern era by implementing information technology reforms. For those of you working on the project, thanks, and we take it very seriously at the White House, and I know you take it seriously here. Secondly, I want to thank those of you who are working on community health centers. One way to help control costs is to help people who are poor and indigent get costs in places that are much more efficient at delivery of health and emergency rooms. And so we're committed to expansion of community health centers. Again, thanks on that, Nancy, for helping in Congress. They work. We're measuring results, and the results are good results. Now, thirdly, lawsuits are running up the cost of medicine. Costs about $28 billion a year when doctors overprescribe to make sure that they kind of inoculate themselves against lawsuit. It runs up federal budgets. It costs the economy about $60 to $100 billion a year. And so we got to do something about these junk lawsuits. I mean, they're running good people out of practice. I said a statistic the other day in the State of the Union. It's got to startle you if you're involved with the health care delivery in America. 1,500 counties don't have an OBGYN because lawsuits have driven a lot of good docs out of those counties. And that's not right. And so we got to get medical liability reform. The House has done a good job of passing it. It's stuck in the Senate. So for the sake of affordable and available health care, is to get a good, decent bill passed. One other way to help control costs is to interject market forces, as I mentioned. One way to do that is through what's called health savings accounts. Health savings accounts is an innovative product that came really to be as a result of the Medicare bill that I was honored to sign. And they're an innovative account that combines savings on a tax-free basis with a catastrophic health care plan. We'll have some consumers here of health savings accounts that will describe how they work and whether or not they're working worth a darn. But the key thing in a health savings account is you actually put a patient in charge of his or her decisions, and which we think is a vital aspect of making sure the healthcare system is not only modern, but a healthcare system in which costs are not running out of control. And part of making sure consumers, if they have a decision to make, can make rational decisions is for there to be transparency in pricing. Because how can you make a rational decision unless you fully understand the pricing options or the quality options? When you go buy a car, you know, you're able to shop and compare. And yet in healthcare, that's just not happening in America today. And so this discussion is centered around encouraging consumer-based healthcare systems and strengthening private medicine through transparency in pricing and quality. And I hope you find this as an interesting discussion, as I will. I'm start off with Dr. Gail Walensky. Do you know anything about healthcare? No. She knows a lot about healthcare. You've been working in the healthcare industry for a while. Tell us what you're doing.
I'm now a senior fellow at Project Hope. A while ago, I had a Mark's position trying to manage Medicare and Medicaid, a very challenging activity. You've given a lot of what I wanted to say. Let me say it quickly in terms of why this is an issue and what we need to do about it. For far too long, Americans haven't known what they pay for health care. They haven't really cared much about what they pay for health care. They haven't realized that questions about patient safety and quality were appropriate questions to ask. Biggest reason is because the employers were making all the decisions for individuals, and individuals didn't usually realize this was their money. Now it's changed in part for some employees because as a result of the Medicare law, employers can offer health savings accounts paired with high deductible health plans. And for those employees, and they're now estimates are about 3 million people have these health savings accounts, they have a motivation to find out more about what health care costs and what they're getting for their money. There's been a problem that people who don't have employer-sponsored insurance or who aren't eligible for some reason, they don't have that opportunity, and you have mentioned in the State of the Union, that's one of the next steps that needs to happen, that it's fair that people who don't have employer-sponsored insurance also have this option. But while making people conscious of what it might cost will help, if you're really going to empower someone, you've got to give them the information. It's got to be easily obtainable. They need to know what it costs to go into a hospital or to have a major procedure or to have a major device implanted. And they need to know something about what they're getting for their money. They need to know whether there are major complications when a particular hospital does something or whether someone has good outcomes and whether the patients are satisfied in going to them. So that's really this next step. In order to empower patients, they need to know what it costs, and they need to know what they're getting for their money. And it means insurers doing something and providers doing something and the government and Medicare helping where they can. And that's really where we are right today.
Thank you for the lead-in. We spend a lot of money at the federal level, and you would expect that if we're sitting up here talking about transparency, then we ought to do something about it. I mean, the federal government is the largest purchaser of health care. Isn't that right?
Right.
46% of all health care dollars.
That's right.
Okay. What are you going to do about it?
Well, Mr. President, we are doing a lot about this already. As you know, before the Medicare drug benefit, Medicare provided a drug discount card for millions of seniors, enabling them to save billions of dollars. And with that card, we made available information on discounted drug prices for all the prescription drugs and all the pharmacies around the country. Seniors used that information to keep prices down. They shopped, and we saw during the course of this program savings actually increase over time. Yep. We also saw lots of seniors switching to drugs that they found out about that could meet their medical needs at a much lower cost. Like, for
example, I'm glad to say, one thing, this is the person watching out there, what we're talking about, for example, when it comes to putting information out on drugs, a brand name drug and a generic drug do the same thing, but there's a huge price differential. And what Mark is saying is that we made, as a result of our government policies, providers to provide a shopping list, a comparison for people to get on the internet and find out, you know, whether they can buy a drug cheaper or not.
That's right, and many people are saving 70 or 80% or more on their drug costs by switching to generics. You can get this information on the internet. You can also get it by calling 1-800-MEDICARE, and we're doing the same thing with the drug benefit, and that's one reason the drug benefit costs now are so much lower than people expected, as you mentioned earlier. We're trying to make more information available on hospital quality, on nursing home quality, on many other aspects of healthcare, but we can't do this alone. We've got a public-private healthcare system, so we need to work with health professionals, with consumer groups, with business purchasers, and with the health plans in this country to get useful information out. We started to do that through collaborative efforts like the Hospital Quality Alliance and the Ambulatory Care Quality Alliance. These are groups that include all of the different key stakeholders in our healthcare system working together to make useful information available on quality and cost. Some of that's happened already, but I think with the leadership from the President and with the full backing of the federal government, we can move this effort along much more quickly and much more extensively to get information out about satisfaction with care, to get information out about outcomes of care and complications, and to get information out about costs. And, Mr. President, we're very pleased to be starting right now a new program that will be piloted in 6 large communities around the country where all these different groups, health professionals, business groups, government organizations, including Medicare and the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, and health plans are going to be working together to make useful information available to consumers and health professionals in these communities about the quality and cost of their health care. Hopefully we'll be able to move this project along very, very quickly.
Good.
We're working.
Nice going. Yeah, I know you are. You're working hard. Mark also has been responsive to some of the issues of the Medicare rollout, and they've been moving hard and traveling around the state. And thanks for responding to what's going to end up being a really, really important program for our seniors. A revitalized, important program for our seniors. It's going to make a big difference. Thanks for working so hard. Robin Downey. What do you do, Robin?
I'm head of product development for Aetna.
Yeah.
And I was instrumental in launching our HSA program. We've been doing consumer-directed plans since 2002. And so we're the first national plan to offer an HSA in the health plan arena.
Good move. I bet you're really selling a lot of them.
Yeah, we are. The adoption is higher in the HSA than it is in the HRA now. It's increasing, and I'm probably one of Aetna's first members in the HSA.
Yes. You and I both. We own
yes.
HSA.
Yes, both in there.
Let me ask you something. And obviously, it's a big health insurance company. Do you obviously got an opinion on transparency? Otherwise, you wouldn't be sitting here. But give from your perspective, from the insurance company's perspective, tell us what transparency means to you and how best we can work together to implement transparency.
Well, transparency to us means giving the consumer the information on both cost and quality so that they can make an informed decision and they can understand the value of what it is that they're purchasing. And from our perspective, we tackled a lot of issues on clinical quality and cost efficiency a couple of years ago and some things we did in our high-performance networks. Cost was kind of the black box. Nobody wanted to open it up. Everyone said health plans will never give access to that information. And our CEO said it is time because of the adoption of the HSAs and how many people are in consumer-directed products now. We needed to see the consumers were getting the right information. So we decided to take a leadership role, and in the summer of 2005, we launched a pilot in Cincinnati where we're providing what we call true price transparency. We actually negotiate discounted rates with providers, and that is the amount that the patient is responsible for. In a high-deductible health plan, that's going to go against your deductible. It's going to come out of your HSA. So that is the amount you would be responsible for. And we negotiate those prices, but we never told you as a consumer what those prices would be. And so what we did is we worked with the physicians in Cincinnati, and we worked with consumer groups. And we have on our website now about 600 procedures, up to 25 procedures for different specialties that you can go out and see by doctor what our negotiated rate is for that doctor, for that procedure. And it's about 5,000 doctors that are participating in about 600 different procedures.
Good. And I presume there's a resistance at first?
Not resistance. They wanted to know why. I think physicians are wondering why do consumers need that kind of information. So they're getting used to that. And then they were actually pretty helpful when we were talking about how we were going to display it. They were saying make it easy for the patients to understand. So they're helping us take the medical terminology, put it into layman's terms. They wanted to make sure it wasn't going to create more work for them. Were people going to be calling their offices constantly? And that's what we want to do. We want to put it on the website so they don't have to constantly call. So we want to provide easy access. And so they were also concerned with if you put cost information there and you don't have quality, then people will price shop on cost alone. And they're very afraid of that. And they should be because people should understand the
value. So how do you handle that?
We're marrying that now. We're going to expand that pilot. It was so successful. We're going to expand it into more locations in the fall of 2006. And we're going to be marrying that information with the quality information so the consumer can go out and see what the unit cost is, what the efficiency is, what the clinical quality is, and so they can look at the overall value. We're pretty pumped about it.
Well, I appreciate you knowing. It must be exciting to be kind of on the leading edge of an interesting innovation into healthcare. It's hard to believe that. Ours is a market society in which people are able to shop based upon price and quality in almost every aspect of our life, with the exception of health care. And it's no wonder that we're dealing with what appears to be ever-increasing costs. You know, it's really interesting. LASIK surgery is a good example of a procedure that was not a part of a third-party payer. Just came to be. People could choose it if they wanted to choose it. Could pay for it if they didn't want to. And would pay for it themselves if they chose to use it. And more doctors started offering LASIK surgery. There was more information about LASIK surgery, and the price came down dramatically over time. And the quality was, increasing. And now LASIK surgery is eminently affordable for a lot of people because the market actually functioned. And I think what Robin's saying is that they're trying to introduce those same kind of forces in Cincinnati. Thanks for doing what you're doing. I met with the old boss today. Maybe he's watching out there.
He talks to me just the way you talk to Mark. Just do it.
Yeah, okay. A little bossy.
Yeah. But you get stuff done.
Yeah, that's right. Dan Evans is the president and CEO of Clarion Health Partners, Indianapolis, Indiana. Thanks for coming. They're doing some interesting things. He's a hospital guy.
Yeah, I'm the CEO of an academic medical center, so we have both a university and a hospital. We have 4,000 peer-reviewed projects ongoing right now, including...
Tell everybody what a peer-reviewed project
is. It's a research project that's overseen by a review board, so it's scientific, and at the end of the day, then it can be translated into from bench to bedside. So, for instance, Lance Armstrong came to our hospitals for his cutting-edge testicular cancer treatment, just for an example. We have the doctor on the staff that changed the mortality rates from 90% to 10%. So we consider that one of our core functions, if not the core function, is the research. But what I'm running into is the same thing that Robin and Mark and Gail described, and that is our patients want to be treated like customers, and they want to know what the value proposition is. And so people are starting to ask, as the HSAs become more popular and they become more informed, what does this cost? And, oh, by the way, is the institution that's doing it any good at doing it? Because it's one thing to know the cost, but it's quite another thing to know whether or not your length of stay is going to be twice as long as it should be, or you're likely to get an infection, all the things that CMS monitors. We're in partnership with the CMS also on information technology. And we believe if we successfully manage my mom's information as she goes from place to place, including our competitors, we'll reduce that over-prescription that you talked about to protect docs from tort lawsuits. As big as we are the defendant in many tort lawsuits, and a great many of them have no merit whatsoever, but the system takes you through them. So the information technology for us converts data to information real time. I've seen it myself. There are patients at this table, and those patients are our customers. Not a day goes by that I don't walk out and talk to a customer. I work 20 feet from where I was born. So I'm in my hometown, which means that I get the retail calls at my desk on a Wednesday afternoon. You know, mom's had a TIA or dad's had a heart attack. Tell me, what do you know about this Dr. McClellan?
And yeah, he's not very good, but...
Yeah, well, we've got the data. And what we need to do is marry up that data with Aetna so that Aetna steers those patients to the high-quality docs and systems. Then the value proposition will take off, sir.
So how easy is it to establish a matrix or a information for consumers to be able to really accurately understand?
It requires willing partners, for starters. Everybody in this room can relate to the kid who breaks her leg on the soccer field, goes to the quick check place for pain, ends up at the ED, at a suburban hospital, turns out to be a multiple fracture, is lifelined or taken downtown to the academic medical center, and you carry your data with you, right? You're your own mule. The information technology will knit all that together so the doc downtown can pull up my mom's data, my daughter's data, and look at it. But it requires willing partners who are willing to share data, not hoard it, and the basic principle that the data belongs to the patient, not to the hospital system.
Yeah.
That's the paradigm shift. Heretofore, the attitude has been the information's owned by the insurance company, or it's owned by the hospital, or it's owned by CMS. No, it's owned by the patient. I recently went through this with my own mother, where she was handed the films at the radiology center and told to walk them across the street to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So in the real world, it happens every day. And through the leadership of CMS and others, Indianapolis has become a demonstration project for trying to link all these things together. At the end of the day, it will drive down costs dramatically and improve quality significantly.
We're really talking about making sure each American has an electronic medical record over which he or she has got control of the privacy. Another example was what happened. The Veterans Administration, by the way, has implemented electronic medical records. In other words, they're using modern technology to bring this important agency into the 21st century. A lot of files at your hospital are still, probably not your hospital, typical hospital, or handwritten?
Well, you know, what happens is they may be electronic in the hospital, but handwritten in the doctor's
office. Yeah, and the doctors can't write anyway.
So what do they need to do? Well, the pen is a very dangerous thing.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. You well know.
And so the idea...
Yeah.
And so the idea is to modernize doctor's offices and hospitals and providers through information technology. And so the Veterans Department has done this. In other words, each veteran has got an electronic medical record. And so when Katrina hit, a lot of veterans were scattered. And they were just, you know, displaced. And you can imagine the trauma to begin with, and the trauma was compounded. If you're worried about your record being lost somewhere, or your medical record, and fortunately, because the veterans of the department had already acted, these medical records went with the patient. And a lot of veterans got instant help. And so a doc could just kind of download their record, take a look at what was prescribed before, take a look at other procedures, and boom, the medicine and the help was brought up to speed quickly, which is great. And I want to thank you for doing that. Information technology is going to help change medicine in a constructive way, and it does dovetail with price and quality. Yeah. Getting kind of a drift to what we're talking about here? I hope so. If not, we'll go over to Jerry. She'll help. Jerry, welcome. Where do you live? What do you do?
Mr. President, I live in Baltimore, Maryland.
Welcome.
And I am a nurse, and I've been in healthcare for over 30 years. And for the last 9 years, I've had the responsibility of running an ambulatory surgery center in Baltimore.
Good. Called?
The Surgery Center of Baltimore.
Very good. And tell us, the transparency issue. We had a little visit ahead of time, so it's not the first time I've seen her. So she gave me a little hint about what she's going to talk about. Go ahead and share with people. Small clinic, relatively small clinic, big hospital guy, small clinic person.
I think the ambulatory surgery centers offer a good low-cost alternative for outpatient surgery for patients. And what we do, I think we do a very good job of offering transparency for the patients, because we think it's important that they have the information that they need, both for quality, safety, and price. And so for our patients, we offer information on our website about our payment policies. We give them a brochure about our patient payment policies. Then we also call the insurance companies and make sure that they have their coverage and how much that insurance company is going to pay. And then we call our patients and we tell them, okay, your insurance is going to cover this amount and you're going to be responsible for this other amount. But it's really difficult for patients to make those comparisons on price, because the payment systems are outdated and ambulatory surgery centers are not paid on the same type of a payment system as the hospital. And it would be a lot more transparent for the patient if they had a system that was paid on the same type of a system.
Yeah, apples to apples.
Apples to apples, and then they could make those comparisons. We give them the information, but I'm not sure that they can get that same information across the healthcare system.
Right. And the reason why they can't yet is because you happen to be on the leading edge of what is an important reform.
I think so.
Yeah, it is. Well, so do the patients, more importantly. And thank you for sharing that with us. You happen to have a patient here.
I do.
You've known Gail before.
Gail Zanilotti was a patient at our center, and I think she'll tell you that probably it was a more convenient and comfortable and patient.
You're not putting words in her mouth.
No, no, no. But I bet you she would tell you that.
It was more convenient and comfortable.
It was very good.
See?
You were diagnosed with what?
With bilateral breast cancer in October. And I had several procedures performed at the Surgical Center of Baltimore. And they treated me as if I were the main event. That's how I felt. Socially, emotionally, physically, the whole gamut was covered. And I chose the surgeon first for quality, and then went on to find the pricing and everything else through them, which
sure.
They were very transparent about. it was a very positive experience, and I'm still in communication with them because through the reconstructive process.
Yeah.
And I would do it the same way again.
And so how does the so you're the consumer, you're walking, obviously pretty well traumatized to a certain extent, but you've got this horrible disease that's attacked you, and you come to them, and they and you're asking what questions? I mean,
I saw the surgeon that night, and I think we were there at 10:30 at night.
Oh, great.
And it's amazing how dedicated some of these doctors are.
Yeah.
And then they take you through the process of different diagnostic steps that you have to take. And really, you see how curable things can be if it's caught early.
Yeah.
And I was very lucky to be able to face with a step-by-step approach to get back to my journey of full health.
Good job. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Hey, you got that sparkle in your eye, you know?
Thank you. Very lucky.
And so, no, I appreciate it. It's an interesting. The transparency reform is going to take place in both large entities and smaller entities, because consumers shouldn't be restricted to shopping only in a large entity or a small entity. Shopping isn't the right word, but you know what I mean. In other words, out there looking for the procedure that fits their needs at the right cost and the right price. It almost doesn't matter if we have transparency if consumers, however, are not in a position to make decisions. In other words, if somebody's making the decision for you, transparency only matters to the decider. And so Bruce is with us today. Bruce Goodwin. He's an HSA owner. Bruce, describe HSAs. Well, first of all, tell us what you do.
My company manufactures computer plate technology for the graphic arts printing business.
Mm-hmm. How many employees?
We have 20 employees. We're a small company.
Yeah. By the way, two-thirds of new jobs in America are created by small businesses. And if a small business can't afford health care, it's pretty likely they're not going to be aggressive in expanding. And I presume you have some health care issues.
Well, I'm here as an employer who is concerned about health care costs for sure, and a strong advocate of health savings accounts. I'm a firm believer that for employers, health savings accounts is probably the best weapon we've got in the battle of these rapidly escalating health care costs. And I'm very much hopeful, and I appreciate very much your leadership in trying to help strengthen the health savings accounts.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about it in a minute. So tell people what a health savings account is. I mean, this is kind of a foreign language to everybody but the 3 million people who own one. It's just a new product, just beginning to happen.
Well, I will say that, again, I'm an employer who has implemented a health savings account, and I'm a participant in that account. So speaking as an employer, I can say that over the past 2 years, we have saved tens of thousands of dollars against what we would have paid for our preferred provider plan had mm-hmm. we continued that plan. So from that aspect, we're quite pleased as an employer. As a participant, I'm very pleased to see these dollars accumulating in my account that I know that I can use to help decide what I need to do with my health care dollars. But it makes transparency an even bigger issue, because now that I've got this money, how do I go spend it in the best way? Right. So transparency is a very important issue as we look forward.
Insurance plan with a health savings account is a high deductible, catastrophic plan coupled with a tax-free health savings account to pay routine medical costs up to the deductible. That's the way they're structured now. Many employees, I was at Wendy's yesterday. Wendy's has now got 9,000 employees using health savings accounts. The company pays for part of the premium as well as the contribution into the cash account to be paid by the customer for routine medical expenses. If you don't spend all your money in your cash account, you can save it tax-free and roll it over to the next year, and then you contribute again. Wendy's premiums rose this year, I think, at less than 2%, or maybe less than 1%, if I'm not mistaken, and they were increasing at double-digit rates. I hope I'm not exaggerating. They were going up quite dramatically, let me put it that way, and now their premiums were significantly lower, and the savings enabled them to put additional money into their employees' accounts, additional contributions. It's an interesting concept because all of a sudden it puts an individual in charge of healthcare decisions. And there's an incentive, by the way, for people to make rational choices about what they consume. Like if you don't smoke and drink, it's more likely you'll stay healthy and not spend money in your account. If you exercise, I strongly urge mountain biking. It helps you stay healthy. And by staying healthy, you actually save money. There's a remuneration for good choice. And what Bruce is saying is that it's helped his business afford health care. It's helped a lot of small businesses. If you're a small business owner, please look into health savings accounts for the good of your employees. Interestingly enough, about a third of those who purchased the new health savings accounts were uninsured. Many of the uninsured in America are young people, kind of the bulletproof syndrome. You're never going to get sick, so therefore why buy insurance? Now there's an incentive to buy insurance because it means you can save tax-free. And so Bruce has used them, and he reports that he's able to better control his costs, which is really important for the small business sector. It's also important for the large business sector to say to their employees, here is something that's really beneficial for you and your families. Because when you save the money, it's your money. Savings in health care doesn't go to a third-party entity. It goes to the consumer. It's a new concept. It's just coming into being. In order for it to work, there has to be transparency. How can you expect somebody to make rational decisions in the marketplace if they don't see price and quality? It's going to be a very important, what we're talking here is a very important reform to really fit into making sure the private medicine aspect of our medical system remains the center of medicine. There's a debate here in Washington about who best to make decisions. Some up here believe the federal government should be making decisions on behalf of people. I believe that consumers should be encouraged to make decisions on behalf of themselves. And health savings accounts and transparency go hand in hand. There are some things we need Congress to do to make health savings accounts work even better than they are. One is to make sure that one's contributions into the health savings account will be equal to the deductible plus any copays that may have to be made. We shouldn't cap the cash contribution at where it is and needs to be raised. Secondly, we need to make sure the tax code treats employees in large companies and employees in small companies equally when it comes to purchasing health savings accounts. And thirdly, and a key component of making sure health savings accounts works, that addresses one of the real concerns in our society, and that is people changing jobs but fearful of losing health care as they do change jobs, is to make sure health savings accounts are portable in all aspects. A health care plan that encompasses health savings accounts, today the rules enable one to take with them the cash balances in their health savings accounts, but not the insurance in their health savings accounts. In order to make these plans truly portable so as to bring peace of mind to people, we got to make sure that health savings accounts are genuinely portable accounts. I look forward to working with Congress to strengthen, not weaken, but strengthen these very important products that put the doctor and the patient in the center of the healthcare decision. Today we've heard some interesting innovative ideas that are taking place from the insurance industry to the providers, the federal government, and we will continue to implement transparency. It's just the beginning, and I predict that as the society becomes more transparent, as the consumers have more choice to make, you'll see better cost containment. And as we're able to contain costs, we achieve some great national objectives. One is to make sure health care is affordable, and two, make sure it's available. I want to thank you all for coming to join us. It's been an interesting discussion. Appreciate your time. God bless.